Hey everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from Exit Coach Radio here on AM 830. You know, one of the biggest questions I get from the show is what exactly goes into a business exit plan and when should I start creating mine? I always tell people the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know, and you can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. Do it right now. Text exit plan to 44222. Hey everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach. Hey, you think making money's hard? Well, try keeping your money safe when your predators and creditors are attacking from every side. These days, you need smart strategies that create a strong fortress to protect what you've worked so hard to accumulate. The Jeffrey Verdahn Law Group is an elite group of smart asset protection specialists that can help you build your fortress and protect your assets. Call the Jeffrey Verdahn Law Group today at 877-774-9238. Again, that's 877-774-9238. 877-774-9238. Tell them the Exit Coach sent you.
Bill Black is a registered representative with and securities offered through Crown Capital Securities LP member, FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Barth Financial Advisors, LLC, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from CCS. Any opinions are those of Bill Black and not necessarily those of Crown Capital Securities LP or Barth Financial Advisors, LLC. California Insurance License 0652621.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well planned. And don't miss our 1 minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us. It is early Sunday morning. We're so happy that you're with us. This is the Exit Coach Radio Show. We talk about all kinds of things that are pertinent to business owners who are thinking about their business future. Today, we're going to be talking a little bit with Golden State Foods, a local company who has international outreach, and what they've done to build a culture of giving throughout their employee base. And how has that pertained to you? Well, you probably wonder what else you can do if you have a business to foster a spirit of teamwork with your employees. And so take a tip from this giant company, what they've been able to do to create a culture, no matter where they are in the world, that feels the same. It's all about giving. It's all about giving back to the community. And then a little bit later today, we're going to be talking with our good friend John Deaney, who is a wonderful thought leader in the area of exit planning, and a new tool that he's put together to help business owners who want to find out how ready they are for the day that they will plan to sell or transfer their business, what they need to be doing to get ready for that. So that's what Exit Coach Radio is all about. We have on our website at exitcoachradio.com all of these shows that we've done for the last many months here on AM 830 are all archived and recorded, as well as our daily podcast. Over 1,000 advisors and authors have been interviewed on Exit Coach Radio. And we also have books and a wonderful planning link section where you can go and do all kinds of things. Let me tell you a little bit about that. You can go there and create a set of instructions to leave behind if anything happens to you for your spouse and for your advisors, called business continuity instructions. You can go on there and design a plan that will retain and reward your key employees. There's a place on there where you can go and start figuring out what your business is worth, how to increase the value of your business, how to understand what you need your business to sell for, to fill in your financial gap, how to find advisors all over the country in various areas of exit planning, and just a wonderful selection of tools. So go to our website, check it all out, exitcoachradio.com. And while you're there, you can listen to one-minute highlights. We have those every day, too. And we're really happy you're with us. Hope you'll follow us on Twitter at Exit Coach and look for our app on the Apple Store. It's all there. So thanks so much. I hope you enjoy the show this morning. Have a great rest of your Sunday. Hey everyone, this is Bill Black, the Exit Coach. You know, protecting your family and business is essential for your peace of mind. If you have legal and financial concerns that keep you awake at night, check out Albert Rausch at ocbusinesslaw.com. Albert is an Orange County attorney with an MBA in finance and accounting. He's focused his practice on seniors and their families. He has in-depth knowledge and experience in the areas of estate planning, taxes, and wealth management, and supports families with their most private matters. If you need someone who will listen to you and provide expert legal and financial support, call Albert Rausch at 714-432-0794. That's 714-432-0794. Or go to ocbusinesslaw.com. Hey everybody, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach. You know, we talk about a lot of business topics, but by far the question I'm asked the most is how do I grow the value of my business so I can sell it someday for an outrageous price? So we've created a special report for you on 10 tips to grow the value of your business. Just text the word drivers to 44222 to get this special free report delivered right to your inbox. That's drivers to 44222. Text drivers to 44222. We have a special treat today. We have three individuals joining us from Golden State Foods and the GSF Foundation. And we're going to talk about the mission and the vision and Golden State Foods Foundation and what they're doing both globally and locally. And we're also going to talk with each of the individuals about a special event that's coming up in just a few weeks here in Orange County. So I'm going to bring on the three individuals from Golden State Foods. They are Shelley Fry, John Page, and Annalisa Lukes. And I'm going to bring them on right now, and we're going to first welcome you all to the show. Thanks so much for joining us. Say hello one at a time. Shelley?
Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Good, Shelley. How are you today?
Great. Thank you. And thanks for having us.
And we also have Annalisa. Hi, Annalisa.
Hi, this is Annalisa. Good morning.
Hi, it's a pleasure to meet you. And John, you're with us as well?
Hi, Bill. This is John. How are you?
Hi. Great, John. Thanks very much. If you could, give us a little background on each of you. Where are you from, and how did you get to Golden State Foods? Let's start with you, Shelley.
Okay. Well, thank you. Happy to. So I'm originally from the OC right here in Orange County, although I've lived in Utah, New York, and France at various times throughout my life. I earned my undergrad and graduate degrees in communications at Brigham Young University in Utah, where I also taught as a professor in the School of Communications for several years. Prior to GSF, I served in a variety of communications roles for a number of different organizations, including the 2002 Salt Lake Olympic Organizing Committee, Touchstone Software, and Fieldbrook Productions. I also freelanced a number of years as a magazine writer and a book author. And then I came to GSF in 2002, right after the Olympics, as the Director of Corporate Communications, which was a newly created position at the time. And I now serve as the Vice President of Corporate Communications, overseeing all of the internal and external communications for the company. So that's me.
That's terrific. It's a great background, a very giving background. You've spent a lot of time in helping, it sounds like. And Annalisa, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I was born in the Philippines and immigrated to the United States in Los Angeles right around the age of 13 or so with my family. And my background is in law and in business. So I earned both a JD and an MBA. And my passion, I say and rather than but, and my passion is really using whatever I can to help people, particularly helping people help others. It really is something that I enjoy thoroughly. So prior to coming to Golden State Foods in 2015, I fundraised quite a bit for organizations in Orange County in the areas of affordable housing, legal services, and also renewable energy. And I've also managed and run an office with regard to renewable energy and had responsibility for making sure that the office ran well over five different counties. So coming to GSF as executive director of the foundation is a thrill because it enables me to gather together all the different skills and use whatever God-given talent I might have to help our company, engage our people, and give back to the community through our foundation.
That's fantastic. And I look forward to hearing about that. We're going to talk about the foundation in just a second, but first, let's get to know you a little bit, John. How about you and your background, and how'd you come to GSF?
As you can see, I work with Shelley and Annalisa, and I'm happy to, and that's one of the things that attracted me to Golden State Foods are the people and their ethos and their passion for the community. I came to Golden State Foods 12 years ago by way of New York, New Jersey. I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. And then, as Annalisa said, I immigrated to California in terms of the work and the opportunity. By profession, I'm a lawyer. I'm the Senior Vice President and Chief Corporate Social Responsibility Officer and Chief Legal Officer for Golden State Foods, and have been in this role for 12 years. Born and raised in Brooklyn to a single mom on government assistance, who did not finish college, but later on went back and got her associate's degree. So in me and in my heart has always been about education and children and families in need, which we focus on, as you said, Annalisa, we'll talk about the foundation later on in that regard. But really, Golden State Food is both a company who's determined to be a company of enterprise, but also a company of ethos and personality. And I like what we do for the community, which we're going to talk about somewhat today. Also, Golden State Foods also has blessed me in taking this job with being able to be chairman of the board of Tuskegee University, which is in Alabama, Tuskegee, Alabama. So the reach and touch of Golden State Foods, its influence in the people, including the people on this phone, is more than just Southern California. It's actually globally, if not, and certainly nationwide.
That's fantastic. That's wonderful. And, you know, for our listeners out there, Golden State Foods, you may or may not know of Golden State Foods, but they're one of the largest diversified suppliers to the food service industry. You've eaten their food. I can guarantee you they provide services to more than 125,000 restaurants and stores from its 45-plus locations on five continents. So I understand that your company makes a pretty good hamburger. Okay, but among other things. Shelley, tell us a little bit more about Golden State Foods and its history and what the company does.
Sure. Happy to, Bill. Thanks. So Golden State Foods began in 1947 in Los Angeles. So we're actually just about to turn 70 next year, and we're very excited about that. We're going to celebrate big. But as you said, we're one of the largest diversified suppliers to the food service industry, and we service hundreds of leading brands in 60 countries on five continents, so all over the world. And, you know, approximately 125,000 restaurants and stores, so we have global reach. Our core businesses include the processing of liquid products, protein products, produce, dairy, and we operate a full-line distribution service all over the country and in selected parts of the world. And as has already been mentioned, we also operate the nonprofit charity, the GSF Foundation, which you'll hear more about in a few minutes. But we pride ourselves in being a values-based company with really proven performance in quality, innovation, and customer service. We're headquartered in Irvine, California, and we employ about 6,500 associates around the world.
And I've been to your headquarters, and it's apparent once you walk in that this is a very different corporate headquarters, focusing on a creed and values. And, John, tell us how that plays out every day at Golden State Foods.
Well, you know, one of the things that makes it tough in business is bringing your judgment to bear on various decisions, whether it's a transaction, whether it's a personnel matter, or whether it's a new engagement. But if you have a filter, creed and values, which we have, which, as you know, we actually have on the back of all of our business cards. It's part of what we share with our associates when they begin. It's on the walls globally and in the world, in Egypt, throughout the world, and here in the United States. And what that value does is it gives us a foundation. It allows us then to have other pillars where we focus on people, where we focus on finances, where we focus on social responsibility, safety, security. But the foundation are creed and values, where we start out by saying we believe in God and the dignity of all people. And the key there is not only just God and the belief that we have, but also people. And that's what you'll find our greatest assets in this company are people. So throughout that creed and the values of treating others as you want to be treated, the golden rule, it allows me even as a lawyer that when you come to a place and you have your judgment and you have your intellect and your skills, you add this filter, you usually come out on the right side of the answer. And so that's in most decisions we use that. And sometimes when you find yourself adrift, you go back to that foundational aspect and you say, wait a minute, is this within our creed and within our values? Is this who we want to be? Is this how I want to be treated? And uniformly, you arrive at a better decision, if not the best, by doing that and using that as a filter.
I can imagine that makes a difference with your associates, your customers, and your community. Can you comment a little bit about that, John, about how that having that as a reference point makes a difference across the board with everyone?
Absolutely. It's in your statement, as you said, when you walk in the office, we're different. We don't want to be different. We are who we are. But in this world of a little bit of confusion, we want to be predictable. And how we are is what our creed and values say. So therefore, what it gives many of our customers who I believe align with us, not only because of our values and our creed, but because of the operational excellence that Shelley spoke of, but because it's predictable. They know that we're going to help them innovate. They know we're going to stand by our values. We're going to stand by independent businesses, you know, as you read the rest of the creed and as it goes on, and that we stand for something and that we don't think so much of ourselves that we've done it all by ourselves. In fact, in our creed and values, we talk about their success as being our success. And we truly believe that when we come to most of the equations in our business settings. So for our clients, they view that as both a value add and a commitment to their excellence, which all of us win, and it's the triple win there. They win, we win, and our associates win. So I think our clients like that. We've been able to grow since I've been here in 2004, and it's because of the operational excellence, our ethos, our commitment to our customers, and being invited into new markets because of how we align with them.
Not to make our listeners hungry, but the management great Peter Drucker said, culture eats strategy for lunch. So apparently when you start off with the culture, it filters down all throughout the community what you do and how you do it and who you do it for. Annalisa, what's impacted you the most about the values of your company?
I think what's impacted me the most is what attracted me the most, which is the first line of the creed. We believe in God and the dignity of all people. And I think everything else stems from that. I think the values are aligned with that initial statement, and I find that to be a differentiator. I travel quite a bit all over the country to visit our folks all over the United States, and one thing that really has touched me is the fact that the creed and values are in every single facility, no matter where we are, whether it's in Seattle, whether it's in Miami. That is one thing that really unites us together. And so it impacted me personally because it's what attracted me to it, but it also has enabled me to affirm that it was a great decision because it's something that I see everywhere I go all over the country.
That's fantastic. And that, again, that culture permeates everything. They might speak different languages. It might be in different types of facilities, but that culture is a blanket over everything. Now, let's talk about that because you have a Golden State Foods has an employee-run and funded charitable organization, the GSF Foundation. Tell us a little bit about its mission and what you're doing lately to help those in need, Annalisa.
The GSF Foundation's mission is to improve the lives of children and families in need wherever GSF associates live and work. So that means it's not just a national foundation, it's really a global foundation. A lot of our focus right now is in the United States. So we have 28 committees that have chairs and committee members who are giving their time above and beyond their day jobs to help us achieve and further that mission of helping children and families in need wherever we live and work. And we do this work a number of ways. One is through grant making, and the other one is through programs. We give away bicycles, backpacks, shoes, and we also give funds to 501c3 nonprofits that provide direct services to children and families in need. One thing that's unique about the foundation is, as you mentioned, it is operated by our people. They own it. And that's a message that I share with them every time I go out. This is your foundation. I want to hear your voices. I want to hear your ideas. And let's make your dreams come true so that we can help the kids and families in need make their dreams come true. The mission is really something that has resonated throughout the community as well, and it's very well accepted wherever we are. Now, one thing that we have been developing over the past year is something that's tied to who we are as a food company. And so we decided that it is essential for us to develop a food program because this is the realm that we work in. So come November, November 17 to be exact, we are launching an event called Feeding Hunger, a No Lunch Lunch, in our Garner, North Carolina facility, because we learned that 1 in 5 children in the United States today are hungry, and they don't know where they're going to get their next meal. And this is just one way for us as a foundation to give back to the community. We will raise awareness, raise some money, and 100% of dollars raised through this lunch event is going back to the community. So again, this is aligned with what we do as a foundation. We raise money, a lot of which is from our associates, and then we give it back to the community with the ideas and the voices of our associates. Phenomenal.
That is phenomenal, and I applaud you for those efforts. It makes tremendous sense, and it has tremendous impact wherever you are helping. And a lot of companies, a lot of our listeners are mature companies who are saying, you know, we should do more. We should get involved. We should help our communities. John, can you give us a little bit of a sense from the top outlook here? How does helping others outside of the company in turn help the company's image?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think what it does, it becomes both that differentiator. And as you may well know, Bill, that the millennials and the different generations, they have diverse viewpoints. And sometimes they select companies by not who they are, but what they do, and what they do, not in terms of what they make. And so we've decided long ago, decades ago, but now you have a name for it, it's called social responsibility, to be about the community, to do the work that Annalisa just mentioned and what Shelley referenced earlier. So that image, while it's important, not for image sake, it's really important because it allows us to attract top talent, diverse talent. And then once they're here, we get the best thinking, the best leadership, the best products, the best innovation. And we think because of how we decided to be, we are able to attract a cadre of talent for that reason. So when you think about the other companies that focus on the bottom line, what we would like for them to do in concert with us, because we want a better society, a better economy, is to focus on what we call the triple bottom line, which is people, profit, and planet. And I think with that, it's okay to be a profitable enterprise, but you also got to think of how do you perpetuate that by preserving assets and resources for future generations. So that's image, in that sense, how to Sprite commercial, obey your thirst, and our thirst is to make sure that others are thinking about how to be better. And that's why we have such programs as the foundation, our CSR programs, diversity, our community programs, because we want to attract the best talent and do for our communities where we live and work. And we found through our surveying of our associates internally, they like it. And this is what they want to do. And they're happier. They're more productive. And they're committed to staying with us. Where you see people leaving jobs after 2 or 3 months or even after a year, we've given them a sustaining principle of being able to do well for communities.
You know, I kind of see the pattern here of today, especially you mentioned millennials, and a lot of people are saying, you know, I'd like to come work for you. I'd like to know what you will pay me, but I also want to know even more, what do we stand for? And I can just picture in your organization a new hire getting not only a packet that tells them about the 401k, but about the foundation and what we're doing together to make the world a better place. And that's so on the mark for how companies need to be thinking these days.
Absolutely. We try to show them in very creative fashion, you know, that we're a company that's already spent over $36 million in 12 years for the good of the community, that we have over 66% diverse population, women and minorities, in a global company that Shelley gave you the numbers. And, you know, unlike Silicon Valley, which is trying to struggle to figure out how to include people, not only have we gone for diversity, but we've figured out how to use inclusion to our advantage by promoting and retaining the right people so that, guess what, we could win as a company so we could do better for our communities. So you're absolutely right. We use that as both a lead and a pull to bring folks aboard. And if that's focused on image, then that's what we'll focus on.
Now, we just have a couple minutes left, but I understand that you're the presenting sponsor of the upcoming seven-pillar Influence for Good recognition next month. Can you share why you decided to support that event, Shelley?
Yes, I'm happy to. We are so excited to be sponsoring this first annual event, which we're sure will be very, very special. We at GSF enjoy partnering with like-minded organizations that share and reward our common values of integrity, respect, giving back to the community, as you just heard from John and Annalisa. And, of course, we always talk about servant-style leadership at the company. So we had partnered with the Passkeys organization in the past and truly trusted their leadership, their area of focus, and their commitment to quality and integrity. And so with the Institute for Influential Community Impact, which is an initiative of Passkeys, we particularly appreciated how they're really leveraging community leaders and a wide variety of organizations to help move everyone forward. So we know that everyone who attends the seven-pillar event on November 2nd will be in for a huge treat. So we're very excited for this event. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, you know, there are movements happening in communities that are trying to bring together all of the factions of that community, whether it's government or education or religion or other areas that nonprofits and the needs of the community, and help people understand what all those needs are all in one place. Because a lot of times we get together to do good, but we do it in kind of a silo, and we don't know that, hey, you know, what we do here might benefit this other group over there. So you guys are right in the heart of one of the best things that's happening. I'm really, really impressed and proud for all that you've done at Golden State Foods and GSF's foundation and what's going on there. And again, I want to thank my guests, Shelley Fry, John Page, and Annalisa Lukes, for coming on and really telling us how GSF, Golden State Foods, is leading the way in really getting their hands around how do we help? Yeah, we want to be a profitable organization, but we also want to help, and we want that to be what we're known for. Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
It's been a real pleasure. It's been a real pleasure to have you. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back after I click all these buttons. We'll be right back after this.
Hey everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach, and we want you to sell your business for an outrageous price someday. So I'm going to rattle off three ways you can grow the value of your business. You can motivate and retain key employees by focusing them on increasing profits. You can get your financial books in order, and you can work on developing strong processes and systems. Now, we put together a free report for you on several other ways you can grow the value of your business. To get our free report, just text the word DRIVERS to 44222, and we'll send it right to your inbox. Again, text the word DRIVERS to 44222. That's DRIVERS to 44222. Get our free report today. And thanks for listening. This is Bill Black, the Exit Coach. Attention, business owners and construction companies. Do you know that one lawsuit can cause you to lose your business? According to the SBA, 20 out of 22 companies that get sued go out of business within 2 years. Lawsuits can be frustrating and financially draining. Gassemian Law Group has over 16 years of experience in business and construction law to give you peace of mind by not only defending you in lawsuits, but helping you avoid them in the first place. Don't wait for a lawsuit. Call for a free 20-minute phone consultation to evaluate your company's risk before trouble begins. Call 949-436-2785. That's 949-436-2785, or visit them online at www.glgattorneys.com. That's glgattorneys.com.
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
Of all the things that can happen on the way to the sale of your business, having a deal fall apart because of sloppy financials is probably the worst. Here's expert Addison Adams.
In the sale of a company, you are in a very cooperative process with the other side. If you're the seller of the business and the buyer is coming in and evaluating whether to buy your business, there needs to be a high level of trust there. A trust that you are not only being open and honest about your business and what you know about it, but also credibility that you know what you're talking about. And that when you hand over your financial statements, for example, they're clean, they're correct, they're complete, and they're not misleading. Preferably, they're audited, and not only currently audited, but going back several years. And this is so that there is a confidence that comes in from the point of view of the buyer.
You're the trustee of your company's 401k or profit sharing plan. You have certain responsibilities. What can happen when things go wrong? We ask Buck Blanton.
We have a responsibility when we run qualified plans as a business owner, or in that world we call it a plan sponsor. That person has a responsibility of due care and due loyalty to the participant. And sometimes we forget that when we run plans and we do other things. But as you said, those breaches can become kind of onerous. The 2013 audit year, there were 3,566 audits performed by the Department of Labor, and more than $2.7 billion with a B dollars in fines and penalties were levied. All of those things can be done and levied against corporate officers personally. It's not your corporate seat that might get sued or levied. It's going to be you personally.
What are some of the biggest challenges facing family businesses in their management transition? We ask Transition Consulting Group's David and Paul Karofsky for their thoughts regarding this topic.
As the baby boomers are coming of age and getting a little bit older, as the next generation is starting to get a little bit older and come into that leadership position, this transfer of not only monetary wealth, but you're talking about the businesses, the assets, whatever it might be, there needs to be a plan to transfer that seamlessly. To my dad's point, the more planning you do and you talk about it as to what that transition of ownership looks like, what is that transition of leadership? Those two are not the same. They can be similar in tie, but they can be mutually exclusive as well. But until you really have a plan as to how you transfer that business from one generation to the next, it's very difficult to do it.
When a parent passes away, sometimes dealing with mom or dad's effects can be challenging. Here's senior real estate expert Allison Whitaker.
There's different levels of sorting through things. And so we work with organizers and professional inventory people, estate sale planners. And basically, they come in and they will help you sort, is this a donation pile? Is this a for sale pile? Are these items things that we need to send off to our auction house in London to get appraised and actually auction off? There's different auction houses as well, not just Sotheby's. If it's sports memorabilia, you know, that we would recommend using. There's also that element of, is it a good time to sell the house when it comes to taxes? Taxes are a whole nother conversation, and a lot of times people think, well, the market's up, we should just sell the house, but there could be some tax ramifications depending upon the way the estate has been set up, that maybe it's better to rent it out for a couple years.
Hey everybody, this is Bill Black. You know, one of the questions I get asked the most is, how can I grow the value of my business in the next 3 to 5 years so I can sell it and transition out and get what I deserve? So we put together a report called Value Drivers, 10 Steps to Increase the Value of Your Business, and we're making it available free to AM 830 listeners. Just text the word DRIVERS to 44222 for this free report about growing the value of your business. Text DRIVERS to 44222 today.
It's always a pleasure when we have guests come back on and tell us what they're up to. This next guest is a friend of mine. I'd like to call him a friend. He's an associate through a group called BEI. We both are very strong advocates of exit planning. And he's created some interesting tools and techniques for you business owners out there. So pay attention. His name is John Deeney, and he's with a company called The Exit Map out of San Antonio, Texas. John, welcome back. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me back. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. My pleasure. John, I know that we've talked in the past about your devotion to helping business owners find their way from a frightened, confused business owner wondering, what the heck, how do I get out of this thing that's got me working so hard, and turn it into a lifestyle so that I can enjoy myself. But tell us a little bit about what brought you to creating the Exit Map, a little bit about your background.
Sure, sure. Well, as you know, Bill, I come from business ownership. I'm not, although I have a couple of degrees, I was never a CPA or an attorney or a financial planner. I owned and operated a manufacturing company, a distribution company, began consulting and coaching owners about 20 years ago, and saw a lot of these issues that you talk about every single day. And I was laughing, I was smiling here when you said, you know, the owners that are afraid and confused. Those don't worry me half as much as the ones that think they have it all figured out and don't. You know,
right.
they're even more frightening. You know, so, you know, when I joined BEI and I had started doing exit planning and didn't even know that's what it was. I had started working with owners to help them prepare. And about, I guess, 7 or 8 years ago now, I came across BEI and said, oh, my goodness, somebody actually has a process for doing this. And I started, you know, I certified with BEI, and I started working with owners. But the reason for the exit map, which was your initial question, was not enough people focus on the operations. Yes, it's tax planning. Yes, it's financial planning. It's retirement planning. But the money has to come from somewhere, and the money comes from the company. And if the company's not ready to sell, all the tax planning in the world isn't going to help. So the exit map is a tool that gets the advisors and the owners to look at a broader picture of what's involved. It asks more questions about management, sales trends, revenue trends, the types of things that are going to determine what kind of multiple you get, whether you sell to a third party or internally, and how much you're going to be able to walk away with.
And why do you think it is, John, that so many business owners don't get that? They don't understand that the business is going to be the source of the capital for repayment ultimately, one way or the other. So many people I talk to, they just don't seem to get it. Why do you think that is?
And as you know, you've seen some of my presentations on the boomers, and my book on beating the boomer bust. For a whole ton of reasons, which we don't have a couple hours to go into, boomer owners identify unusually strongly with their businesses. There is a psychological barrier to thinking about life without the business because the business has become their identity. And what they don't realize is for the generations before and after them, that was not the case. The business was the business. It wasn't me. But boomers do have a high correlation between who I am as a person and what I do. And so that's one of the reasons they put it off. The other one is, I think, a general expectation that if I worked hard at this for 25 or 30 years and built it up to where it's providing me with a very comfortable living, then of course it's going to fund my retirement. And it may not be that easy, that slam dunk. It may not. I mean, we're working with an owner right now, has purchased a lot of real estate, has built the company very nicely, has a bunch of employees, and you know, we started out and he said, well, I feel very comfortable that this, you know, we'll be fine, we'll be just terrific. And as I do and you do as well, I had him go to a certified financial planner and get his retirement projections drawn up, and the planner came back and said, well, yeah, you can retire at 65, but you're going to be penniless by the time you're 74. And that's not good news. Also gives us as exit planners a bit of a challenge.
Was that assumption, John, based on the projected current sale value of the business after taxes?
No, we did it without the business.
Okay.
But he didn't think he needed proceeds from the business. He's now finding out that how much he sells his business for is going to be the critical factor in a comfortable retirement, where he thought it would be a non-issue. So, you know, sometimes it's ignorance. Sometimes it's a psychological fear of dealing with the issue. And as I said earlier, sometimes it's overconfidence. It's just this inherent belief that I've got a good company, ergo, someone must pay me enough for it.
Right. So what you did was you went out and you created basically a 15-minute online tool for business owners and their advisors so they could more effectively discuss their preparedness for exit. Tell us a little bit about how the exit map process works.
Well, we had a couple criteria when we set out for this, and the issue I've seen is that too many of the, let's call them entry products, you know, for a client to engage in initially, are long and detailed. And let's face it, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm not ashamed to say it. I chase squirrels. I have ADD and a short attention span. And asking a business owner to sit down and complete a 3-hour questionnaire is not the road to success. So it needed to be online. It needed to be accessible and mobile. It needed to be short. And I've got some background and expertise in questionnaires. I really don't like the ones that say, I have enough money. My company will sell for enough money to fund my retirement. And they have no, probably, I think so, and definitely. Well, just because you check definitely doesn't mean you know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So we made it multiple choice, but with very objective, concrete answers. I know that my company will provide for me in retirement because I've had an appraisal done, I've had a retirement projection done, and if you haven't had those things done, you really don't know. So it's 15 minutes of checking the box, and then each question has 5 weighting factors that we do in the background. It's a pretty complex algorithm. We may have gone a little bit down the rabbit hole on that. So each report is unique. There are 20 questions. There are 5 possible responses to each of those. And there are 100 different answer sets for each of those responses. So every report that comes out is for you and your company, and you will see the references to exactly what you answered in every report.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I'm looking at one of your reports, and it talks about, first of all, it gives, as a business owner, you're looking at this and saying, okay, well, first it tells me overall am I prepared, and then it breaks down into financial preparedness, my planning preparedness, my revenue and profit preparedness, operations. Each one of these is on one page, which again, as you say, most business owners just love that. There's not pages and pages of difficult reading here.
Right,
it's
and
a
we
very
have
attractive
colors.
Analysis.
I was going to say,
yeah,
mention
are
the pretty colors.
there are graphs with just a couple paragraphs in between each of the graphs. And again, the concept of this is to really you say it's okay, but let's turn myths into facts, right? And then
mm-hmm.
we can really focus on those areas that you need to focus on. Most business owners are so busy trying to, you know, just keep their business going and get it ready for whatever. They don't have time to spend a ton of time on this stuff, but this helps them get on the right track, John. And what happens when a business owner completes this? And what happens? Does their advisor get a copy as well, and do they review it together,
yeah, the,
or what's the process?
The mm-hmm. one you're referring to is 12 pages long, the assessment, and that goes to both the advisor that asked them to take it and the business owner. And then it gives the opportunity, the owner the opportunity to look it over and say whether or not there's anything that he's particularly concerned about. I mean, if he scores really well and he feels he has a long runway to his exit, he says, okay, well, there's nothing we have to worry about now. Maybe his CPA told him to take it. He says, well, you know, we can talk about it next year. If he sees some things in there that would benefit from planning, and most people do, because most businesses would benefit from planning in some area, then he talks to the advisor and he says, let's get together. The report, the assessment is always free to the business owner. the advisor, if he wants to debrief the business owner and go into depth, has the ability to buy a set, 2 40-page reports, one for him and one for the slightly different, and one for the client, where it goes into a full page of narrative on every single response the client gave, why it's important, what kind of things he should be thinking about, how urgent it is to start on this, how difficult it'll be to change it, and really gives them some details so they can do some serious planning around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fantastic. And then it also spells out, as you said, now that you know all this information, it'll be much easier for your advisor to work with you to help you prioritize those that you need to work on. Because as we all know, this concept of preparing your business for sale or transfer isn't just a, well, you just need to do these two things and you'll be all set. In most cases, there are multiple tasks that need to be taken on over a period of time. So
right.
You've told us the basics of when an advisor and owner review the map, what happens, who pays for it. Why do you think that business owners need this particular assessment, John, with your perspectives here?
Well, it's because of the operational aspects of it, I think, Bill. Most of the other assessments I've seen, the shorter ones, the ones that can be done in a reasonable amount of time, no aspersions on the insurance industry, but most of them have come out of the life insurance industry. And they're all life insurance type questions. You know, are you sure that your family will be secure? And then the operational ones, and there's a number of them. I know you're a practitioner of a Value Builder, John Warlow system. I know John well. There's Mouse and some of the others. And one, I won't say which one, and it's not the one you work with, says, we will take this assessment because it will bring you through 16 critical areas of your company and 147 key performance indicators. I mean, you lost about 75% of your business
wow.
owners right there.
Right, exactly.
You know, you just can't do that much. You've got to give them an idea of operations. My sales have been steady for the last 5 years. Well, that might not be as good as you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Depends upon who you're hoping to sell to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, your employees
yeah.
may love the fact that you've had steady sales. I can tell you a private equity group has no interest in steady sales.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's the kind of information
right.
that comes out of it.
Yeah. So this is something that, again, if you're focusing on your future and when, you know, what you think you might want to do, whether it's going to be accomplished or not by where you are and what you're doing, the exit map assessment and analysis is an outstanding tool to get the information out in the open so you and your advisors can work on the appropriate things. John, if people don't have an advisor, can they come and just take the test online on their own at your website?
Yes, absolutely. They can go to – actually, we have a new site set up, and you've got it there, Bill, for owners that has a lot of other stuff. It has, like, what do people look for in due diligence and some of the BEI white papers that you and I both use. And that's at yourexitmap.com.
Got it. Okay, so your exitmap.com, and business owners, you can check that out. How long? You said, I think we said earlier, this is not going to take you all day long to do. This is going to take about what, 15, 20 minutes?
15 minutes. It's 20 questions, multiple choice. It's actually 22 questions. We ask questions about your timing on the front end, because that affects a lot of the scoring of the difficulty and urgency of the other questions. But the actual questions about your business, there are 20 questions. We don't ask for a confidential financial information. We don't ask for anything that you wouldn't tell the guy sitting next to you on the airplane. They're just broad questions about where your company is and what's going on with it, and a little bit about where you are and you know what your plans are.
Well, John, it's a fantastic assessment that you've put together here, and I know it's going to help a lot of our listeners. So again, if you're listening to this, go to www.yourexitmap.com and check out the assessment. Should advisors get in touch with you if they want to learn how they can get involved with this, John?
They can. I think I'm certain at the end of it we have a checkbox if you want somebody to get in touch with you, but you don't have to. You can just use it for yourself too.
Okay, so for owners, go to www.yourexitmap.com. For advisors, take a free test drive at www.exitmap.com. And John, what's next for the Exit Map? I know you never sit still very long. What else are you working on?
Well, I mentioned earlier, but I have an e-book out called Beating the Boomer Bust.
Yes.
I just did a rewrite, and I'm having it illustrated now. And it's about three times as long as it was. And we hope to have that out in the first quarter of next year. So that's the project of the moment.
And if you are a business owner-oriented group or organizer of a business owner-oriented group, John Deany is an excellent speaker. He will keep your audience on the edge of their seats as they learn about a lot of the trends facing that have come about because of baby boomer business owners and information they need to know. So get in touch with John, johndeany.com. Well, John, thanks so much for joining us. It's always fascinating to hear what's going on in that mind of yours, and you're helping business owners. And again, as I said, I've looked at and taken the assessment myself to see what it looks like, and I'm very, very impressed with it. I think it's going to do very well. So I wish you continued success.
Thank you very much.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this, so please stay with us.
Well, my friends, I've done a lot of research on the topic, and I've come to the conclusion that someday, in some way, you are going to exit your business. Yes, I'm talking to you who are listening. If you own a business, someday, some way, you're going to exit. Now, it might be on your own terms. You might sell it to an outside buyer, and that might be to a competitor or to a much larger company who wants to buy you because you're such a well-run business. That would be awesome, wouldn't it? Chances are you'll try to sell it to an outsider, or you'll transfer it by gift or sale to a child because you want to see the business continue and the culture continue and keep it in the family. Or maybe you don't have children in the business and you want to transfer it by sale to an employee or a small group of employees, or maybe even you want to sell it to all of your employees through something called an employee stock ownership plan or an ESOP. You might have to sell the business for health reasons. You just can't do it anymore because something's happened to you health-wise. And finally, you might just die with your boots on and somebody else has to come in and figure out what to do and package it up and get it ready for sale or transfer. No matter what the outcome is, it's going to be an exit someday. And you might as well come to grips with that and get started planning as soon as you can for that event. The Small Business Administration says that almost 8 out of 10 small business owners do not have any kind of a succession, exit, or transition plan. And we want to help you along the way. So we've put together a free report that talks about when people start thinking about their exit planning, why they start thinking about it, and what the avenues are and some ideas and strategies so that you can start the process. You can think about things before you have to think about them, really get to know what is in an exit plan. And we're giving this report away because we want you to be prepared. We want you to be well planned. So here's what you do. Get out your cell phone, text exit plan, and that's just exit plan with no spaces, like it's one word. Text exit plan to 44222. Text exit plan to 44222, and you'll get a free report downloaded immediately to your inbox, and you can start reading and planning immediately, get some ideas, and from there we send you to some other types of resources, give you some other links you can check out, some other ideas, and really get started on this planning process. Hey, you're going to exit someday, somehow, anyways. Why not get started now when you're calm and when you can think about it. Text exit plan, all one word, to 44222. I sure hope you take advantage of that and sure hope you enjoyed the show today. That's going to do it for the show today. I want to thank you for joining us. I'd like to thank my guests, my sponsors, and my producer, Julie Tabazon, for pulling the show together. It's been a real pleasure to be with you today. I want to remind you, go to our website at exitcoachradio.com, and you can dig into all kinds of interviews with advisors, including our past interviews here on AM 830. And follow us on Twitter at Exit Coach. We'll see you again next week here on AM 830 KLAA. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.